this is Ash Rowan, Rose Aradney's assistant. Before we get started with part four of Rose's interview, I wanted to let you know that you can learn more about Rose's work at www.masteringmagicwitchcraft.com. Or you can check out her blog at www.rose-ariadne.com. Enjoy part four of the interview.
I'd like to know, for example, what it's all about and if they're really spirits and can we talk to them. That's often a question that people ask, especially when you see the shows, Oprah Winfrey and a lot of the shows that are on TV that deal with spirits. I guess that's part of that is the entertainment value, but people always want to know more about, you know, spirits in houses and haunted houses. But anyway, they really want to know if we can talk to spirits, especially those that have gone before us, family members and so on. Would they talk back? For example, I'm about to lose a loved one. Will he still be with me? Or will I still be able to talk to him or her? This person is the closest thing, so I guess I want to know if I can still keep in touch.
That's another question that can only be answered completely within the context of your own belief. Do I believe that we can talk to spirits? Absolutely. I've done it many times. Do they talk back to me? Yes. I've held conversations with them on numerous occasions. Some people say that we communicate with spirits only so long as they have not passed into the fullness of the afterlife, into heaven or whatever else it is that you believe in. I think that we can communicate with them even after this passing occurs. Some people believe that once an individual has been reincarnated, that you can no longer communicate with them. This may certainly be true, but I still think that there's the essence of an individual spirit that we can actually contact, that part of us that's linked into the divine energy and connects us all together. That still makes it possible to contact the essence of who that person was when they were with us, even after they've reincarnated into another form. I think that there's one caution to make, though, especially in dealing with the spirits that have recently passed over, those ones that we love so much with our heart and souls. There are some cases where a spirit will not move on in their cycle until they feel that you've accepted their passing and that you can deal with it. You know, they feel still concerned to take care of you. So if your thought is to communicate with your loved one and keep them with you always, then please be careful that you're not selfishly holding them back from the wonders that they can experience just so that you won't feel their loss. I fully believe that you can accept their passing, let them move on, and still communicate and be in touch with them and have the essence of who they were in your life without holding them back from moving on. Now, how does this communication occur? There are rare cases where you may actually see their full physical form before you and chat as you would a live friend sitting down having a cup of coffee with. That doesn't happen too often, and you have to be very open to that experience. I think more often they appear in our meditations. They appear to us in dreams, sometimes in our daydreams. Sometimes we hear their voice. We may feel their presence in the room and just know without a doubt that they're with us and that they're offering their love and comfort. The more you work with strengthening your bonds with the magic and tapping into the central essence of the divine energy, the stronger your communications can and will become. Like with all other things we do in life, practice makes perfect.
Possible to learn or to perform any simple spells without having to arrange for things or ingredients that, you know, can sometimes are almost impossible to get hold of?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, some of these, there are a lot of tough ones and some very complicated and interesting rituals.
Like the eye of the newt.
The eye of the newt. As I teach in my course, and I've taught to many people, you honestly don't need physical tools to do magic or to cast spells. This includes ingredients, ritual items, any other tool that you might think to use. Don't get me wrong, tools can be extremely helpful, especially with beginning practitioners. Think about what your ritual items are in the first place. They are symbols. They, each and every one of them holds a particular meaning or even a particular energy signature that resonates with what you're trying to accomplish. These things can be very helpful, especially when beginning, because you do not have to focus on the essence of the object or the ingredient to bring about whatever it is that you're trying to accomplish. But it's truly the essence of the object that's needed for the ritual, and the essence is not so much a physical thing. Although ritual tools can be wonderful for use and can gain strength and power through continued use to enhance your magic, if you put too much strength in them or too much, what's the word I'm looking for? If you put too much reliance on them, you might find yourself with failing spells because of your inability to find a particular ingredient or because your item broke or turned up missing. You know, all of a sudden you put so much reliance on that object that you don't have it. Oh my gosh, you can't cast spells anymore. I don't believe that that's true. We need to not put that much reliance on them and use them as a tool. If you cannot find dragon's blood, for example, as an ingredient necessary for completing some of the spells that you'll see out there, think of what dragon's blood is, what the magical essence it is imbued with, what makes it necessary for that particular spell. For some people, the essence of dragon blood is simply power. It's used to boost the energy of a spell. So visualize the essence of what is needed and boost that power yourself. It's not the object, it's the essence of the object. The object allows us to focus more on the ritual without having to bring in all of those energies on our own. But they are not necessary. You know, just focus on what it is you're trying to accomplish and add that energy or what it means to you into what you're already doing. Does that make sense?
Right. So what you're saying is sometimes you can do without the tool as long as you're focusing in your mind on it.
Right.
And the energy transfers that way.
Exactly.
Well, tell me, how do spells really work?
Well, spells are all about energy. It's about manipulating energy and having your faith in the ability to manipulate that energy. If you want to take it from a religious standpoint, people who have strong faith in God or whatever, they pray, which is focusing their energy on what they want, and they send it forth expecting for it to come back. It's the same with magic or witchcraft. You are focusing your energy, and you are expecting it to come back. With the scientific standpoint, if you want to take a look at it from that perspective, again, going back to the whole principles of quantum mechanics or quantum physics and the I don't want to get into the real technical details of it, but Schrödinger's cat, for example. The theory that helped to develop quantum mechanics was the theory of Schrödinger's cat, where Schrödinger postulated that you could put a cat in a box with a bowl of food that had poison in the food. And the cat could eat that poison food. You could shut that box. The cat inside that box, when you're not being able to see it, when there is no visual perception or any way to perceive what's going on inside that box, is in a state of limbo. And nothing happens to that cat until you open the box and actually physically see the cat. Then something happens. Well, if you take that from the point of witchcraft, you are actually, nothing has happened around you. There's no events that have happened around you until you make them happen or somehow visibly measure them happening or create them into being. Science is saying that nothing is happening around you until you make it happen by looking at it.
Our perception.
So
is this like the tree falling in the forest?
Exactly like the tree falling in the forest.
That you don't hear it?
Yep. If there's nobody around to hear it, does it make a noise? You know, that's the same concept that they're looking at. So, you know, it's a matter of, you know, science is even looking at it that way, until we can actually physically perceive something or until we are putting our focus on something, it does not exist. So it becomes a matter of ease for us to focus on it. It goes back to spells work through belief, it works through faith, and your ability to tap into the energy that's right at your fingertips. It's not good or bad, it just is. It's everywhere around you. It's available to you at any given time. It's a part of who and what you are. And the most powerful aspect of energy is emotion. What we possess is the power of emotion to make these things happen. Have you ever walked into a room where two people have been fighting and you just kind of feel that tension,
oh, yeah,
and energy in the air? then they're acting like nothing's wrong. But you can actually physically feel that something is wrong. Have you ever gone into any place, anywhere, and just felt uncomfortable when you walked in? You don't want to be there. You don't know what it is, but you just don't feel comfortable being there. Or the exact opposite. You can walk into a place and feel peaceful and relaxed, or you can feel happy and excited. You just, you know, just by the energy, the emotions that are in that place. Some parapsychologists believe that people who think that their places are haunted because they walk in and they feel that really bad, negative feeling, it's not actually a spirit that's in the place, but it's an emotional impression that was left in the place. Now, if the energy of emotion is strong enough to leave that physical presence that you can feel, then, I mean, obviously it's one of the most powerful things that we possess, that we can use, that's at our fingertips. The energy of emotion is strong enough that people can sense them without it actually having a physical form. They may not realize why they're feeling that way. They just feel it. There was one case where I lived in a house that had, I just had this bad, bad feeling every time I walked past the basement. There was this old coal cellar, you know, where they used to dump the coal in when it was the old Victorian houses. And I got a really bad feeling, and I started thinking, well, maybe somebody died in that coal cellar, you know, thinking, oh my gosh, maybe it's a haunted house, it's a ghost or something. It turned out later on that the landlord that I had for that house, his mother actually used to lock him up in that coal cellar when he was a child. So what I was feeling was the terror of a child and the impression of the energies that was left in that coal cellar. That's how powerful of an energy that emotions really are. Animals are particularly sensitive to these energies. Have you ever experienced, you know, extreme sadness? You're, you know, you're crying your heart out, you're dog comes up and lays his head on your lap because he just, you know, he wants to comfort you. He knows that there's something wrong. He senses there's something wrong, even though you haven't said a word. Or maybe, you know, you get angry and he starts and heads right out of the room. You don't even have to raise your voice. You don't have to yell or anything. They're just out of there because they know, oh, I'm angry. I'm gone. Emotions are so powerful that they leave behind that physical presence. They are the power that we can use behind spells when we're casting magic. When you cast magic, you focus, you visualize, and create, seeing in your mind's eye what it is that you want the final result to be. Behind the visualization, you put the force of emotions, drawing on the physicality of that energy to manifest your end result. The more emotional attachment that you have to the outcome, the more powerful your spell is going to be. But the emotion needs to be clear, not muddied and erratic. You know, anger, these types of things, anger, hatred, sorrow, they're all erratic emotions that create unpredictable spell results. You need to be calm in your center and focused so that you can focus your spell and make happen what you want to have happen. Basically, when you're casting a spell, you're pulling on the energy all around you, you're focusing it, shaping it like Play-Doh in order to make your desired end result. Then you're boosting it with the power of your emotions and setting it free to take a life of its own. That's a lot of the reason why the Wiccan religions focus so much on the goddess energy when they're talking about their religion, their spirituality, even though we deal in both the duality of the male and the female principles. A lot of them focus more on the feminine principle because that is the energy of creation, and that is what we're doing every single time we're casting a spell. We're in that power of creation. We're in the goddess energy.
I hope you enjoyed part 4 of Rose's interview. Remember to visit Rose at her blog, www.rose-ariadne.com, and also take a peek at her life's work at www.masteringmagicwitchcraft.com.